9. Well, said Lesagoras, looking at the processing centre, this is more damage than I'd expected. The rest of the black-coated paladins had rushed outside after Locke and the rest of her team, leaving only Westyke and the leader of the ancients. It was definitely Lesagoras talking. The nobleman who had been in charge of that body beforehand had been loyal, enthusiastic, and not the kind of man you put in charge of projects that required compound sentences. Westyke hadn't been sure that such a man was the right sort to be part of the return of the ancients, but now he had a clearer picture of how things looked.
I'm afraid Arica Eurici insisted on handling Locke's capture himself, Westyke said,
noting the shattered crystals and broken tables and general chaos that would likely slow down any processing in the processing centre for the next week or two.
I offered alternatives that might have allowed for a quieter capture, but he was quite emotional about it. Arica Eurici was a bit of a blunt instrument, Lesagoras said.
He clasped his hands behind his back while the few functional golems began to pick up the detritus.
He had a fairly low opinion of humanity, you know, which was why he championed the plan to devastate both the Republic and the Empire.
Westyke nodded politely.
I'm sure such a plan would eventually have worked out in a manner that facilitated the return of the ancients, my lord.
Lesagoras turned to him with an amused look.
Delicately put, Westyke.
He paused as a black-coated ancient came into the processing centre.
Mr. Skinner, where do we stand? Well, the place is crawling with kobolds, said the man, chewing on his lower lip. But nothing we can't handle. May be able to use them as well as what happened at the Forge of the Ancients. I'll need what's left of the hunters, though. Granted.
Lesagoras nodded to the man, who ducked back out of the room.
Would you like to know what happens now, Westyke? Of course, my lord. I can hardly help tear down the world of men and rebuild the world of the ancients without knowing the plan.
Westyke smiled.
You'll forgive me tempering my curiosity, however. Arica Eurici did not always appreciate it.
Lesagoras chuckled.
You can rest easy, Westyke. I have no intention of slapping a band on you. I note you avoided volunteering to grab one when we first arrived. You knew a life of thraldom was coming, and you thought that you deserved better. Trying to take what you believe you deserve is the only way you ever get anywhere.
He gestured at his own body.
This poor fellow never thought twice about what being a paladin, the mortal vessel carrying an ancient, actually meant. To be honest, Westyke said, I'd be surprised if he had even thought once about it.
Lesagoras raised a hand, and one of the golems switched from picking up smashed fragments of glass to repairing the moving belt.
And you never told them, did you, Westyke? I'm guessing not all of these men would have volunteered for a thraldom. And you knew what it meant, and you knew that we needed thralls, so you kept quiet and just never put on the band yourself. Those without the intelligence to ask the difficult questions, Westyke said, generally deserve what they get.
Another of the black-coated paladins came back into the room.
I figured out why we had intruders in the entry chamber. We're dealing with a death priestess.
Thank you, Mr. Lively.
Lesagoras nodded.
Take steps. We made efforts to get our souls into this world. I'd rather not have them drained out of it again.
The presumable Mr. Lively nodded and ducked back out, and Lesagoras turned to Westyke.
I like you, Westyke. I like this world. I don't see any reason to bathe it in fire just because it's not exactly the way we left it all those centuries ago. This republic of yours has everything we need already in place.
He waved at the room.
Barring a few repairs, of course. You know what strikes me as odd, though, Westyke? What's that, my lord? The scrying panels show Arica Eurici lying in wait for Locke by the processing center door, ready to cut her down as she came in. If that were his plan, why on earth would he sound the alarm beforehand? Why give Locke that warning instead of letting her walk into the room unprepared?
We may never know, Westyke said, with a sad shake of his head.
As I said, my lord, he was very emotional about her. I doubt he was thinking clearly,
and with an enemy as skilled as Locke, a clear and objective mind is vital to the task.
Lesagoras gave Westyke a long and searching look, and finally said,
That task is now yours, Westyke. I'll have one of the boys give you the message crystals to find the trackers Arica Yorichi was using.
Thank you, my lord. Westyke bowed.
I'm honored to help, and I'll use the trackers. I believe I have a few other avenues to explore, options Arica Yorichi never considered.
Good.
Lesagoras nodded.
I have operations running in parallel that can assist.
He pressed a stud on his paladin band, and one more of the black-coated ancients came in, a handsome man with eyebrows that made him look permanently confused.
Mr. Slant, coordinate our incoming and outgoing information on this lock figure, would you?
Mr. Slant smiled.
Just give me a target, sir.
Lesagoras didn't smile this time.
Gilspower has talked about Locke's team a great deal. They're quite possibly the most powerful direct opposition we face on our return, and we must assume that every theft, every bit of petty vandalism and harassment, every action they take is a stroke in their plan to destroy us.
So it looks like the wind demon is breaking out, Kale said, from the control console of the sad and unnamed airship. And while I'm not positive that Jell has possessed it as part of a quest for revenge against Locke...
Locke!
Shouted something inside the balloon that had parts, but not all, of a functioning mouth. It's probably her, Kale finished lamely. What? How? Locke was still clearing her head. She'd blindly stumbled out to the dock with Kale towing her, almost down from Lesagoras's parting shot.
The paladins fired several energy blasts at the airship as we fled, Icy said, without looking up from the knots he was tying in the rigging. The airship's barriers were less than stable to begin with.
Locke tried getting to her feet, leaning on her walking stick, and ignoring how a lot of her body was burning with pins and needles. The airship was shuddering as the balloon flexed and distended, the wind demon inside trying to break free. Is this Hessler's 91 seconds thing?
That was only an example, Hessler yelled.
Also, yes.
Locke!
The wind demon shouted again. Locke reached into the neck of her jacket and pulled out the warding charm Hessler had made for her. It was cracked and lifeless. Think I found the problem.
I can help with the rigging, Derry said from where he was sitting.
You can sit exactly where you are, said Desidora, who still sounded pretty shaky herself. You were badly hurt, and until we know for certain that you're all right...
Badly hurt?
Irithelith Leolon shot Desidora a look.
That's a bit of an understatement, Death Priestess.
A mustard-yellow tentacle ripped through the side of the balloon.
Maybe helping with the rigging would be fine, Desidora amended.
Locke hadn't really been watching the airship's progress, focused as she was on getting her legs to work again. She looked now and saw the red glow of the canyon walls beside them. They were nearly to the top, getting there in perhaps a minute more. Derry was trying to shove the tentacle back into the rip in the balloon. Ululenia and Desidora were both still sitting. Hessler was watching over Tern, who was grimly loading her crossbow. The airship was shuddering and shaking, the balloon distending wildly now, with the shape of something very angry visible inside it. Desidora, I need you to brighten my aura. Signal flare, if you can. Ululenia, get me to the top of the canyon. Locke nodded to the tentacle. I'm the carrot. Ululenia blinked and seemed to come back to herself. Of course, little one. She shimmered, and a moment later, a great shining white eagle perched on the railing. Locke felt whatever Desidora was doing to her aura as she leaped over the railing. It felt like being larger without changing size, filling the space she was in more strongly somehow. Then Ulilenia's talons closed gently around her shoulders, and she was rising past the canyon walls.
Locke!
Came a roar from the balloon below her, and the airship staggered up after her. The wind rushed around them, and the night stars looked almost impossibly silver blue after the red of the canyon walls.
You all right, Ululenia? Locke asked.
I am stronger than I was, little one. I can carry you as long as is needed.
Not what...
I know. Locke let it lie. A few moments later, the airship dragged itself up past the canyon walls. Looking down, she saw the rest of her team leap out onto the safety of solid ground. Take us in, Locke said, and Ulilenia coasted down to the top of the canyon, a scrubby plain whose normal and unglowing dirt was an honest relief after all the magic from earlier. She landed in a roll that turned into a tumble, given that her legs still weren't working all the way, grunted, and pushed herself back to her feet.
Time for the stick, Captain, Kale called over.
Please. Tern fired a bolt whose head Locke didn't recognize, but it hit the balloon, and the wind demon inside it shrieked in pain. Hassler raised a hand and flung out a grey beam that made the demon scream even more. Desidora gestured at Locke, and Locke felt normal again, as well as keenly aware of how much everything was hurting right then. And then she felt even less than normal, like she was wrapped in a cool blanket that muted everything around her.
Locke! The wind demon yelled. I will find you! You cannot hide forever!
Locke wanted badly to shout something back, but she stayed quiet, and the airship shuddered and shook. And then Tern and Hassler fired again, and the wind demon roared in pain and sank back, and the airship began to fall. In a moment, it was lost behind the canyon walls. A few moments after that, she heard the sound of a lot of wood and crystal crashing on the canyon floor far below.
So, Ethel, about your tree ship, Kale said.
Irithella Flealon sighed.
I sent the request shortly after the demon began acting strangely. Captain Thelenia will be here in an hour.
All according to plan, then, Kale said, and clapped Derry on the shoulder.
Good to see you again, kid.
Things had been exciting at the mine last night, Hendris gathered. The door to the processing centre had a giant scar in the frame, and an airship full of alchemists and lapitex was sitting at the dock unloading when Hendris and the rest of the miners arrived in the little hopper that brought them from the facilities up top. Golems trundled around cleaning up debris, and judging by the scorch marks on the lift, nobody would be getting any work done until the safety inspectors had cleared everything.
Got a flare?
He asked the supervisor, who was talking with Javel, an Orajar kid who'd drawn night work.
Something like it.
The supervisor glared at Javel, who looked shamed-faced and confused at the same time.
Clean-up duty up here, and whatever set off the magic caused a slide at the idiot tunnel. Need someone to check it out.
I'll go.
Hendris had almost as much experience as the supervisor, and no particular love of clean-up duty. The supervisor nodded, and Hendris grabbed the hopper and took it down to the ground. The canyon walls glowed less brightly in the daytime, although Hendris had gotten used to the red light years ago, and actually found normal glow lamps disconcertingly yellow-blue by comparison now. He watched the dock as the hopper descended. It had always seemed strange to him that the mine had been built halfway up the canyon rather than on the ground. It wasn't as though the walls glowed less at the ground, but Hendris figured that there was some kind of politics around it. Most things boiled down to people in expensive clothes arguing with each other and pissing it down onto everyone else. He reached the ground, set the hopper to idle. Most new squinters accidentally spent a night on the canyon floor after the hopper had headed back up to the dock without them, and hiked over toward the idiot tunnel. Hendris saw the wreckage of the collapse and the resulting slide from a ways away. The scale was massive. The old idiot tunnel had crumbled at the bottom, leaving a broken hillside of smashed boulders and dirt crystal 50 feet high. Hendris didn't consider himself a sentimental man, but the miners took Sunrise Canyon seriously. There was a kind of beauty in the glowing, glossy rock, and he actually found the wreckage offensive. What the hell did this? He asked, scratching his head and glaring at the mess. The kobolds did little tricks now and then, when someone scared them or came into the mine wearing silver. But they hardly ever hurt anybody, and they had never done anything on this scale. Something this big would take a damn fool wizard actually flinging magic into the mine on purpose. Someone was going to ask if the collapse actually made the tunnel more stable, though. Some idiot in fancy clothes. And Hendris needed to have his answer ready, which meant climbing up the damned rock slide and checking the tunnel itself.
He was making his way up through the rubble when a rock shifted beneath his foot and something grabbed his leg. Hendris yelped, jumped and pulled away, and then, as he landed, thought that he was being an idiot, that he'd caught his leg between two rocks, which was what it had actually felt like more than anything else. He convinced himself that he was being foolish as he turned. But something was scrabbling out from under the rocks, something with too many legs, and Hendris stumbled backward, and then it was out and free, and somehow it was actually a short person, a dwarf maybe, in a cloak. Hendris saw that the cloak was miraculously free of dust and grime, and thought, magic, and then thought about how he'd thought he'd seen too many legs and felt claws on his foot, and he kept moving backward. "Now listen," he began. "I don't want any trouble.